What is this?
Lights.
Me?
Me. Lights, camera, action, take two.
Stupid computers.
Yeah, we started recording this and my computer just reset itself because it was reinstalling Windows. Thanks, updates. So we're starting from scratch because I didn't do a backup.
And my descriptions are probably going to be way worse this time
because
it's been even longer since I watched them.
Oh, I was going to say, like... Kind of got a little pausey last time, but anyways, let's jump in. This is month of movies. I'm Scott.
And I'm Jason.
And this year, I decided to try to watch another set of 52 scariest movies of all time that I've never seen before.
And I'm watching all the 3D movies I've bought because I have a 3D TV, and I keep buying movies, but I don't watch them. So now I'm trying to get through all my 3D movies.
And then whatever else other movies you watch during that month. Yeah, so the first movie I watched this month was a movie from 1999 called In Dreams, where,
What Dreams May Come.
No, In Dreams. I think that's around the same time, though. Is her name Annette Bening, I believe? What happens is, this woman, she's like an illustrator, like a child book maker. she's...
In Dreams, Annette Bening.
Annette Bening.
Robert Downey Jr.
Spoiler alert. You find out he's the bad guy, but you don't... it's not a spoiler, because you don't know it's him until the moment that he goes, oh, you're the bad guy. He's like, I'm the bad guy. Not verbatim. Fuck you, Tony. I don't know why I just had to say that. She has these weird dreams where she sees... there's, like, children that are going missing, and she sees, like, what's happening to the kids... And she's trying to tell the police, like, I know what's happening. And they're like, oh, you're a crazy lady. You're not making any sense. She's like, I know. I think it's the guy who lives in an orchard, apple orchard or whatever. And like, oh, lady, you're just having weird dreams. But then they uncover a body of one of the kids in, like, this giant reservoir because they, like, flooded a town to make room for other town area. I don't know why you would need to flood a town. I forgot that already. But it's crucial to the plot. If you want to watch it, it's at the very beginning. It tells you. But then, as she's like realize, she's like seeing all these visions in her dreams. And then the night of like this play that her daughter's in, her daughter disappears, and she goes, "Oh shit! I wasn't seeing what was happening. I was seeing the future." So then she's trying to. So then she realizes like the kid in the dream is her daughter, and then she's trying to figure out like because she's seeing. Through his eyes and these little weird events that he's doing and stuff. And then it kind of goes into, like, to his past and stuff like that, and there's some weird things that happen. But it was interesting. It was a very 1990s movie. I think, that, like, the next movie that Annette Bening did was American Beauty. So it was around that time. And it definitely feels like it's from that time. Robert Downey Jr., I felt like he was kind of in the area where he was kind of going through rehab. Because it's Robert Downey Jr., but he didn't seem like... There was someone once you're like, oh, okay, it's neat. Maybe it's the fact that he had, like, really shitty wig and really shitty contacts that just kind of made him not seem that creepy when he should have been creepier. I don't know. But I gave it a 5.5. It was all right. I wouldn't recommend it, but I watched it because I was watching it with a friend, and she had watched it when she was a kid, so she's like, I want to see this again. I'm like, okay. And it was all right.
Is there it? What was it?
In Dreams.
So that wasn't on your list?
No.
Okay.
No. The next movie wasn't on my list either. It's called Brigsby Bear. There's a YouTube group called Good Neighbor that we used to watch many years ago, and one of the guys who's now on Saturday Night Live, named Kyle Mooney, he helped write the movie, but he's also the main actor in the movie. I think it's produced by Lonely Island, even though it's not Lonely Island type humor. It's about, again, this movie, I don't want to give too
Should
much...
Should I do what I did last time?
Yeah, read the IMDb summary, because it's the very beginning of the movie, I was sitting there watching going, what's going on? And then they explain it, and I go, oh,
well,
shit,
this was the,
I didn't see that coming.
This is the Rotten Tomatoes
summary. Oh, okay.
which might be the same. Brigsby Bear Adventures is a children's TV show produced for an audience of one, James Kyle Mooney. When the show abruptly ends, James's life changes forever. He sets out to finish the story himself and must learn to cope with the realities of the new world that he knows nothing about.
Yes.
Without giving anything away, there's the summary.
But it has a pretty awesome, like, because I like Kyle Mooney, and he plays a character that's, like, it fits him. So, then again, he helped write it, so it makes sense.
This is one review. Dope as shit.
It is. I liked it a lot.
Why did you only give it a 3 out of 5?
Because that's a 7%. 7 out of 10. I don't know. Oh, no. That's right. That's a quote from the movie, too.
Oh, okay.
Because he's at a party, like, that's dope as shit. He's like, yeah, that's dope as shit. And, like, he's trying to fit in with these, like, high schoolers. And he's just like, hey, that's dope as shit. That's right. I forgot about that. But it has, like, some cool, like, co-stars. Mark Hamill's in it. Greg Kinnear's in it.
Claire Danes.
She's in it for a little bit because she's a psychiatrist. Oh, God. The guy from Matt Walsh from, like, Upper Citizen Brigade. He was in it. Michaela Watkins. She's in it. She was on the Red Hot American Summer. Wet Hot American Summer, like, TV show and stuff. And
Red Hot.
But yeah, I liked it a lot. I gave it an 8.
Nice. So the first movie I watched is a movie called Atomic Blonde.
Oh, yeah.
This was on HBO, so I watched it because I missed it in the theater. I wish I saw it in the theater because that would have been amazing. But anyway, this movie takes place in 1989 when there's East Berlin and West Berlin and MI6 and all this stuff,
espionage. Mission Impossible 6?
No. I don't know what it stands for, MI6. It's like the CIA of
London. It's like the KGB? London. Oh.
But anyway, Charlize Theron plays a character named Lorraine, and she is brought in to retrieve a list of traitors, I think it is, that the East Berlin, which are the bad guys, has of spies that are in West Berlin.
Okay.
So she's set to go get this list, and they have problems finding the list, so they try to track down the guy who had the list, and it ends up turning into a movie where she's trying to protect this guy because everyone wants him dead because he knows this information of who these traitors are and stuff like that.
Okay.
It's a pretty badass movie. The fight scenes are pretty epic. There's a lot of one camera fight scenes.
Like long shots?
Yeah, long shots where the choreography and the fights are amazing.
Continuous.
One continuous fight. Like, the stairwell scene is pretty amazing. There's a scene in, I think, like a bedroom or something, a loft. It's pretty crazy. I don't know. It was pretty awesome. The music was awesome because it was 80s music.
Yeah.
But it was German, so it was like 99 Luftballons, and like it was German words to a bunch of 80s songs.
Okay.
So the music was awesome. The look of it was very dark blues and stuff like that.
The colors,
like the tones. Yeah.
I don't know why you said lighting, like dark blues. I'm like, you just said it was 80s music, not like...
No, not jazz. Music. Yeah, the look of it. But it has Charlize Theron, James McAvoy, John Goodman, who are all pretty freaking amazing in this movie.
Okay, one of the women in the movie?
Yeah.
She is just showing up everywhere.
Yeah, she's like huge. I forget what her name is.
Sophia Boutella?
Yeah. She is a girl who... Because everyone's comparing this to like, hey, if Charlize Theron was James Bond... Like, so she plays the love interest.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's kind of a lesbian love interest, but she also doesn't know if she should trust her because there's spies and all this stuff, but, yeah, she was pretty good.
I think last month in the April one, it was when we watched Kingsman.
Okay.
She was the one with the sword legs.
Yeah.
She played the mummy in The Mummy. She's
in the Hotel Artemis that just came out.
She was in the Star Trek Beyond that I didn't watch.
And she was the mummy.
She's apparently going to be in Fahrenheit 451.
That came out.
It came out?
Yeah, it's out. It's HBO original movie.
Oh, didn't know that. Anyway, like, she's only been in 18 things, and she's just showing up everywhere. Holy shit. I like her, though.
But I mean, American Blonde, going back to that, she was really good in that, too.
Atomic Blonde?
What did I? American Blonde?
That's not even the right country.
Well, America's part of it, I think. Because I think that's where John Goodman's character is from. But Atomic Blonde, I gave it an 8.
Okay.
I thought it was really good. It's one of those I'm going to eventually pick up, I think, to own on DVD. Nice. Because I watched it twice.
Yeah.
So I thought it was good.
That's good. The next movie I watched that was on my list. Now, unfortunately, at this point, because 2 years ago I did the 52 scariest movies I've never seen. And because I compiled all these movies onto lists. And it's like, oh, this one was on 10 lists. This was on 6 lists. I went through all the high ones, so now it's like, these are on 2 lists or 1 list.
Like, these are movies that are supposed to be great, but they don't make the top 100.
No, yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's basically at this point, it's just, because I only did
they're newer ones or ones that are obscure.
Yeah, and so, yeah, because even like with the first 52, I think I watched 59 of them. I cut out a lot of the ones that I had already reviewed on the podcast or that I've seen already in real life. So I'm like, I'm just watching ones I haven't seen for this list. So most of these are going to be like a one-person review saying, oh, I like this movie. You should check it out. Now, to preface that, this movie I watched was called I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
I'm not recording the podcast.
Yeah, the reason why my computer just stopped and restarted just having to Jason's computer. So you have your movie list elsewhere, right?
No.
Uh oh.
It'll be fine.
Okay, because that took like half an hour last time.
Yeah, go on.
All right. I'm Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. It's about a character who she's like this maid type character. Not maid. What is it?
Nurse? She was a
house nurse?
Handmaid. she was kind of like a butler.
Yeah, a young nurse.
That's right, we looked that up and it was nurse.
A young nurse takes care of an elderly author who lives in a haunted house. Boy, oh boy, I just saved you an hour and a half. I know. That's the problem. I was like, oh, that seems cool. The lady from Luther, the crazy one from Luther, apparently is in it. Ruth Wilson. She plays the main nurse who's watching over this old woman. And she's really scared of things very easily. So in this old house, and the woman's upstairs, and it's a big old house in the country where there's no one around, she's freaked out by a lot of things. And it's, to say it's a haunted house is very, it's being very generous. Because maybe one or two jump scares happen in the first hour of the movie, and then at the very end when things are getting figured out, then you say, oh, this is what's happening. Now she's starting to see things. But she's taking care of this old woman, and like I said, she doesn't like scary things. And this old woman wrote all these novels, and then she's telling her, like, she starts calling the maid by a different name, because the main character's named Lily, and she keeps calling her Polly. And she's like, who's Polly? And she realizes that one of the stories that the old author wrote was about this woman named Polly, and she's like, she mentions in the book saying, I didn't make up the ending. I only told you the ending that Polly wanted you to know. And you're like, what the fuck does that mean? Because it turns out it's not a story she made up. It's a story a ghost told her that happened to her in that house.
Oh.
However, it took about an hour and 20 minutes to get to that point. Up until that point, it had some neat shots. It didn't feel like a horror movie, but there's some kind of artistic shots where, like, the camera is sitting in the kitchen, and it's a ways away, and it's angled at this, like, focus on this, like, cupboard, and you're like, what is happening? And then the character walks into frame, and then she, like, walks into, like, where a rule of thirds type thing, but up until that point, you're like, this is kind of disorienting a little bit, but also kind of neat shots. But after an hour and a half of that, it didn't really...
Yeah, I was going to say, when you initially see it, the discomfort is what they're going for.
Yeah.
But then after a while, you're like, okay, you can change this now.
Yeah, but it also, like I said, it didn't have a lot of... like, the camera shots were neat looking, but it didn't feel scary.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I gave it a 5. I don't know. 4.5 seemed too mean, but 5 seems too high.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go into quarters.
I don't do quarters.
I'm just going to say a 5.
Technically, I probably shouldn't even do halves, but...
Yeah, whatever. I don't know. It was all right. I wouldn't recommend it.
So I think it was in March of this year we watched Pacific Rim Uprising.
Yeah.
What was that?
I tried doing the war ready.
There you go. So I have the first movie, which we saw in the theater.
Oh, you're seeing the movie? I was like, where are you going to this?
So we saw the second one in March.
Yes.
And then I bought it in 3D. But we already saw it in the theater. But this is part of my list of going through the movies I bought in 3D. So,
well, we watched the first one before the podcast even started.
Right. So I have nothing to reference that one. But watching it the second time, it is so much better than Uprising.
It really was.
Just like the intro shots of the first time you see the Jaegers, which are the giant robots. Actually, I got to give a description of the movie before I get into details, I think.
Well, they heard the sequel.
Yeah. The first podcast they're listening to.
No, just pretend the second one didn't exist.
This movie takes place in a future where giant monsters are coming from the trench.
Yes. Pacific. I don't know. I don't know geography.
So there's giant monsters coming out of the trench, and each of the countries create giant robots to fight these robots or monsters. Monsters are called kaiju, and the robots are called Jaegers. And each country has Jaegers that go and fight that are on the Pacific shore. And this movie takes place that this has been happening for a while. The monsters are becoming more frequent. There's more attacks. And they're like, the robots aren't helping. We got to do something else. So they're going to disband the robot program and build the giant wall to block the monsters from coming in. And then there's like these two scientists who are trying to figure out where they're coming from. And they find out there's a portal at the bottom of the trench that they're coming from a different dimension. And the frequency of the monster showing up is doubling, so every, like, let's say it comes every 7 days, the next time it'll be 5.5, and then, like, it just keeps cutting in half. And they get to the point, they're like, it's going to get to a point where they're sending multiples just at a time.
Boom, boom, boom.
And they're trying to find a way to stop it, so they're doing one last hurrah to close this gate that's in the bottom of this trench. The intro of the first monster fight in the movie is pretty awesome. The first intro of the Jaegers, like them building the robots and all the people going into the production of these robots, it was pretty epic. I thought it was pretty awesome.
Gypsy Danger
is the main one. I thought it was a fantastic movie. Guillermo del Toro made this for him, his younger self, basically. He's like, I want to make a movie that I would love to see as a kid. So he made this movie. But adults can enjoy it too, because I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
And then the second movie that we saw in March was done by somebody else. But the first one, I gave it a 7.5. The 3D was pretty awesome, because most of the Jaegers and Kaiju are 3D rendered. Special effects, so they looked fucking amazing.
They look like they move like creatures should.
Yeah, and then like, they move like robots should instead of people. They move like robots. I gave it a 7.5.
I'm just having a fun time looking through the posters on IMDb.
Oh,
there's some amazing posters, man.
Okay, I'm gonna talk about my other 3D movie that I watched.
Okay,
I watched this movie called Legend of the Guardians. The Owls of Cthulhu or something like that. I was looking for the box. I don't know where I put the DVD.
I'll pull it.
But this movie was an animated feature film done by Zack Snyder.
Gahool.
by Zack Snyder after he did 300 and after he did Watchmen. He did this movie as a bargaining chip or whatever so he could do Sucker Punch, the movie he really wanted to do. But this was an animated film about owls. It follows the story of these two young owls who are trying to learn how to fly. You know, they're so young, they're still learning. They're hopping from branches to try to learn how to glide and fly and stuff like that. And then they get kidnapped. And they get brought to this group of bad owls called the Pure Ones.
Oof.
Which sounds very Nazi-ish. But they bring them there. They hypnotize all these, like, so they're not the only ones that are kidnapped. These two are kidnapped, and a bunch of other, like, younglings are kidnapped, and they're all hypnotized to do their bidding. And what they do is they find owl pellets, and they break them apart, and there's little chunks of metal in it, and they harvest all the metal, and they get power. But one of the main brothers that you follow, he is smarter. I don't know how he didn't get hypnotized, but he doesn't get hypnotized. He leaves with this other girl owl who didn't get hypnotized because they're strong enough to fight the whatever.
They have a high high wisdom.
Yeah.
Or intelligence.
So they leave because they're trying to find these legendary owls called the Guardians who could put a stop to these pure ones. And that's the basic story. It's not very in-depth of a story. It's pretty basic, but I thought it was pretty interesting. As far as the CG goes, it was pretty amazing, the animations that they did.
I was going to say, I'm just looking at pictures, I'm like, some of these look like actual owls in some shots, but
The way the owls hopped around and flew and tried to fly and all that looked so real. They must have had captures of actual owls trying to do these things, and they're like, this is how the owls would move. And they animated all the feathers. So when wind was blowing and stuff, you could see the different feathers animating. So it looked really cool. And of course, since it's a Zack Snyder movie, you got to have at least one scene where there's slow-mo fighting. And they did that, which also looked cool.
This guy looks kind of very fake and cartoony.
Yeah.
But then, like, there's this barn owl. Like, that looks kind of real.
Yeah. And then during the epic fight scene, you get to see how these owls, there's like metal face masks they put on so they can like headbutt each other. And they got like add-ons to their talons. So they got these metal claws and their swords and all this stuff. It's pretty interesting. Yeah. I thought it was an entertaining movie. It wasn't anything extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, if you want to see a animated movie, go watch this. Cause I could give you a list of 10 better ones. But I thought it was entertaining. Nothing extraordinary. I gave it a 5.5.
Okay.
The best part about the 3D DVD Blu-ray was there was a mini film on it of Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote done in 3D animation, which looked amazing because Wile E. Coyote, it actually looked like fur and stuff. And Roadrunner looked like feathers. And obviously, if you've seen Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote cartoons, you see Wile E. Coyote failing a lot.
So, like, basically it was...
And it was... It looked amazing with him falling through the smoke, like, but the spiral still, of smoke.
They still look like the characters, but just the textures were...
Yeah, okay. It was basically the same outline of them, but if you put fur and feathers on them, so it, like, puffed out a little bit. But that was... I mean, that was... It's probably, like, less than 5 minutes, but... That alone was probably worth the $10 I bought the DVD for.
Oh, is it called The Fur of Flying?
Yeah. So okay. I gave Guardians 5.5 out of 10. It wasn't amazing, but the DVD was... Or I keep saying DVDs. There's Blu-rays now. The Blu-ray...
Yeah, Grandpa.
...was worth getting just for that bonus. So I'm not going to sell it, even though I will probably never watch the movie again. But I'll probably watch that short. Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
So, Scott, what did you watch?
I watched... I was down in Kansas City, and I got to experience the Alamo Drafthouse...
Oh, yeah.
...experience, because they had a movie party for the movie Airplane, which I've seen dozens of times. Not probably not dozens of times, probably half a dozen times. So I was like, all right, cool. Like, we got little pins, like we're like little flight people. What do they call them? Little aviator wings. I don't know. We also got pieces of paper that we got to throw when the plane lands. Spoiler: the plane lands. And then also we got like little crack 'em shines. What are they called? Glow sticks.
Crack 'em shines.
That's what you do. They crack 'em and they shine. This is like to help. Everyone's like waving around, like trying to taxi the planes and stuff. It was a weird experience, but it was fun. But the plot of the movie is there's a guy who's his girlfriend is breaking up with him because he can't commit and he's to anything and so on and so forth. But he wants to try to get back with her. But he was in the war, I think probably Vietnam at this point because it was in the 70s ish. Went to war and he had a lot of bad experiences in the war, so he's afraid of airplanes again. So he basically buys a plane ticket, jumps on the plane to try to win her back. Meanwhile, something is wrong with the meals that happen, and they're feeding them, so everyone's like, half the plane gets sick because the fish was bad.
It was the fish. I was trying to remember if it was fish or chicken.
It was the fish. So then all the pilots are sick, so then it's up to him to try to fly the plane because he's the only one on board that's able to fly the plane. And that's the basis of the plot, but a lot of jokes happen because it's the, Smekel? Z, it's not the Z.
Nope.
Zemeckis brothers wrote it, so it's a lot of slapstick comedy, a lot of dumb comedy, a lot of smart comedy, comedy through repetition. Unfortunately, since this movie was made like in the 70s, there are a few sexist and racist jokes.
Zucker brothers.
Zucker brothers, what'd I say?
Not that.
Uh-oh. Zemeck?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Keep going.
But like, there's like some like sexist jokes and racist jokes now that probably wouldn't be as tolerated. Accepted if it was in a movie that came out now. But Leslie Nielsen was amazing in it. Robert Stack is awesome because he's just Robert Stack. But yeah, it's a pretty funny movie. If you've never seen it before, check it out at least just to say you watched it, because it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in that movie is so good. Like that cameo of him is so good. And just like when Stryker, like, because they have so many running jokes where airplanes were obviously very different from now because of 2001. So like, remember there used to be like all these people that would just be handing out the religious things, like, oh, want to donate to the church, donate to the church, mm-hmm. And like it numerous times that happened at the beginning of the movie. And then when Robert Stack comes in, he just beats the shit out of everyone that comes in. It's like this action scene. It's such a good scene. Oh god, he's such a serious character. It's so good. The fact that they use serious character, because they had a lot of serious actors mm-hmm. playing funny parts. Like Leslie Nielsen wasn't a comedic actor until that movie. So like he was so used to they have characters that are so used to like giving straight lines, and like that kind of dry humor is what I love. But yeah, I gave it a 7.5 because nice. It's Airplane. The next movie I watched was a movie called Burnt Offerings. This one was on my list because like two or three lists recommended it. The best way I can describe it, it's almost like The Shining before The Shining came out, but not as crazy. There's a family, a mother, a father, and their son, and they want to have a vacation. So they go to this person, like this ad. I don't know where they found it. It classifieds, I guess, because they don't have Craigslist. So there's this house, like this big mansion out in the country, and they go, oh, let's go here and have our vacation. They go inside, and it's just this giant mansion. And the people that live there, it's like the guy who played the penguin, Burgess Meredith.
Say Danny DeVito?
No, he's in a wheelchair and some of that. And this older lady's like, oh yeah, we'll rent it for $500 for the whole summer. Like, $500 for the whole summer? That's really cheap. Which I guess it really is, even for back then. And like, but she's like, the only catch is, our mother lives here. All you have to do is when you make a meal for yourself, just make one, a plate for her, put it outside her room, and then she'll eat it and then leave the dishes, and like that's all you have to worry about. And like, all right, I guess that's fine. But then as they're staying in the house, they kind of start losing their sanity, I guess. Because there's one point where, like, the father and the son are, like, playing in the pool. And then, like, they start, like, horsing around and, like, roughhousing. Then the father gets way too into it and starts, like, trying to drown his son. And then, like, the kid's, like, obviously afraid of his dad then after that. And, like, just weird things like that where you know, like, the heat was turned on in one of the rooms. And they locked the door. And then they're, like, just weird stuff like that. But then you find out that for all the pain that is being caused, the house starts, like, healing itself and fixing itself up and, like, just, like, oh, suddenly, like, this wall's, the paint's not cracked or peeling anymore and stuff like that. So it's not an overly exciting or extremely scary movie, but it was interesting. I'm not upset I watched it, but I wouldn't go, you need to watch this to anybody. So I gave it a 6.5. But the main actor that was in it, like, he's been in a lot of, like 70s horror movies and stuff like that. Yeah. Oh, Oliver Reed. That's his name. He looks familiar. He looks like, oh, he's in Gladiator. That's right. I don't know.
Stuff. There's a lot of people in Gladiator.
Well, his name was Proximo. That sounds like a really big name. And that's like he's known for that. Like, that's his first movie that shows up. But yeah, but it was a pretty decent movie. 6.5 though. Yeah.
So I saw a movie called Truth or Dare.
Oh yeah.
So if you haven't seen a trailer or heard of this movie, it's a Blumhouse. In the theater, the poster says Blumhouse is Truth or Dare. Everything says that, but I just call it Truth or Dare. The premise of the movie is a bunch of high schoolers, college kids.
I think it's
college kids. Go down to Mexico.
Your parents won't go like, oh, you're a sophomore? Go have fun in Mexico by yourself.
Well, they could be seniors.
That's true.
They go to spring break down in Mexico. At the beginning of the movie, like, the main girl that you're following, she's like, oh, I'm not going to go on this spring break because I'm going to do Habitat for Humanity. And I'm such a goody two-shoes. And her best friend's like, nope, I called them and said that you have shingles, so you're coming with us. And they're like, oh, okay, I guess we will.
okay.
And they go down, and a bunch of their friends and stuff, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, she's single. There's this creepy guy who follows them around that he has the hots for her, but she has no interest in him. And then while they're in one of the bars, the creepy guy comes up to her and starts hitting on her, and she's like, no, no. And this other guy at the bar jumps in and saves the day by, like, basically cock-blocking that guy. And then he's like, hey, we should go. I want to show you guys this awesome place. And they go to this old monastery building that's in the middle of nowhere that's, like, cobwebbed and all gross and broken down and stuff like that. And they decide to play a game of Truth or Dare.
Uh-oh. What could go wrong?
And they go around the campfire, and they play Truth or Dare, and they all take turns. And then you find out, they're like, oh, what did you see in our friend? He's like, she looked gullible, and I want to... I don't feel bad of strangers dying if it means I get to live. I'm like, what the fuck? And then after that, they're like, that was freaky. And they go back home.
Oh, well. That was weird.
He tells the main girl, like away from the rest of the group, that you have to play the game, otherwise you die. And she's like, what? And then when she gets back home, she keeps getting text messages from anonymous numbers and stuff. And they're like, truth or dare, truth or dare. And eventually she does it. And then the next person goes, and it's that creep from the commercial, the trailer. He's like, I'm going to show my business.
Fucking, I hate that movie just because of that line.
And then he doesn't do it, and he slips and falls and breaks his neck on the pool table. So he's the first death. So in the trailer, they show the death. Like, yeah. It's pretty early in the movie. And then she's like, oh my God, this is true. So then she gets all her friends together and trying to convince them that, hey, this game is real. And a couple of them still don't believe it. They're like, that's just a coincidence that he died and blah, blah, blah. And then it slowly starts whittling the numbers down. And later you find out that there was a game that was played that's still going on, because the guy who invited them was like the start of the game. So those people are still playing too.
Mm-hmm.
And they, when they played the game, they made the rule of two truths and a dare. So if two people in a row say truth, the third person has to do a dare. And then the dares escalate quite a bit. There's like, hey, you must like kill this person and stuff like that. Like, those are the dares. Like, what? That's pretty extreme. But the end, I mean, it's not a terrible movie, but the end of the movie, you're like, this is unbelievable now. Like, it just gets out of hand and so ridiculous that you're like, what? Because they find out that it's an evil spirit, and evil spirits can possess people, places, things, or ideas, and the idea of the game is what it possesses. I was the only person in the theater, and I laughed more at this movie for how bad it was than, like, most comedies in the theater.
I just fucking hate the dumb goddamn faces they made.
Yeah, because that's the face that the demon has.
He's just happy.
Just creepy happy, like extended
Snapchat filter.
Yeah, it looks like a Snapchat filter.
I swear to God, if this is another fucking movie that they recorded on a goddamn iPhone.
No, they didn't.
Okay.
So I gave it a 5. Okay. I feel like I'm being pretty nice, giving it a 5 out of 10. But,
well, you were entertained by how shitty it was.
Well, so. I was laughing when it wasn't supposed to be funny. It's like, oh, this is predictable. This is predictable. And the end is like, that's not predictable. That doesn't make it funny.
I just know how it's like, it's not the full smile, but we're just getting to the smile. It's like, that's a good still for the fucking IMDb. This picture also.
Well, she like comes walking at the person.
Just, like, I don't.
Oh, she's like killing somebody in that.
Yeah, movie. I know, but like, I just hate looking at it. I just hate looking at the pictures of this movie. Like, all the still images just make me mad. I'm so glad I didn't go with you. Oh, God. So 5.
So I gave it a 5. The next movie you saw...
Ditto.
...is Bad Samaritan.
Yes.
Okay.
Bad
Santa Myrna.
Bad San Andreas.
Santa Myrna. Bad Samaritan. The main guy in the movie, I knew him from Misfits. He was my favorite character in Misfits. And it's also got David Tennant as, like... The villain?
Yeah,
he's the villain.
Yeah, I'd say he's the villain.
I'd say he's the villain.
And they pretty much make that well known right at the beginning.
But it at the beginning, at first, you don't know because the two main characters you're following are thieves and stuff. Yeah. So it's like they're bad, but then this guy's worse than them. So yeah, it's like
you don't realize he's a bad guy right away. You just realize he's a complete
asshole,
fucking douchebag asshole.
Yeah. So he drives up with a rich car, whatever. So the two main guys are valet parkers. And what they do is they get into a car, and then they use the GPS on the dashboard to go to their houses. And they got the car, so they use the garage door opener, go in the house, steal little things around the house that are worth money that people might not realize they're missing, bring the car back, and all is good. And then they do that a couple times a night. Well, this guy, he's a complete asshole to them, and they're like, we are stealing shit from his house.
Because he's like, he also has like a
Maserati or something.
Maserati, I think. Yeah.
So they go to his house and the one guy stays at back to like still valet the cars. The other guy goes to the house. Going through the house, he finds an unopened credit card. So he grabs it, activates it. So now they have this unlimited credit card. And he finds this checkbook. And when he takes a picture of the routing numbers, there's a girl.
The flash goes off.
Yeah, the flash goes off, and you see this girl in the corner of the room. Bound and gagged
by like chains,
chained up in a chair. Starts making that noise because she can't talk. And then he's like, holy fuck, there's this girl here. And they're like, yeah, but you gotta get out of there because he wants his car back soon. And da, 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 da. And then the rest of the movie is him trying to find a way to catch David Tennant in a trap, but then he's like getting back at him, and it's by the end of the movie, it's pretty predictable what's going to happen, but I still thought it was a very interesting movie. Just the fact, like, hey, we're watching these kids be criminals, and now they're becoming the good guys.
Yeah, and the main character, though, he becomes a good guy pretty fast. Like, his conscience changes.
He's pretty like, damn fast. A person's life is a little more important than a credit card.
It's like, the thing I did like about this movie, it had some pretty, unfortunately, it had some pretty, like, generic
cliche
lines and plot devices and stuff. But but it had some good moments too. And one of the things I liked was the fact that the main character is like not a great guy, but then like right away he's like, okay, I don't give a shit if I get in trouble. This is what's happening. This woman's life is online, and everyone's like, we don't believe you. You're still a bad person.
Yeah, you're a criminal. No. We don't trust me. You.
And then even though he's trying to give up everything, his life just keeps getting worse.
Yeah,
everything goes wrong for him. He's like, just fucking, this is happening. Like, and no one believes. It's like, Jesus Christ, this guy is like laying out everything on the line, and it's still not working.
Right.
But David Tennant's American accent,
not good.
Was not great.
Especially since like the main guy kept his Irish accent.
Yeah.
It's like, why couldn't David Tennant have kept his Scottish accent?
And there's a part near the end where David Tennant changes his hair. And I lost all, like, respect for that character because it just looked so shitty and like, his hair just was so shitty.
Hair was, like,
like, nice and, like, sort of, like...
At the end, it was, like, one of the Bobs from Office Space, the guy who's in Scrubs.
Yeah.
It was that hairstyle.
I would say it reminded me of oh, God, what was that serial killer?
Ed Gein?
No. One of the womanizer guys. God damn it. Shit, I can't remember what it. Whatever, like he's like one of the like, but his hair just reminded me of like, oh, he's trying to be this guy. God damn it, it's not even worth.
Ted Bundy.
Yep, that's it.
Da-da-da.
Yeah, he just reminded me of like.
I'm like, he shows a picture. Where's the name?
Yeah, just, like because there's that guy also. Yeah, but I gave it a 6.5.
I gave it a 7.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty entertaining. I wasn't disappointed
that
I saw it. It wasn't amazing, but it wasn't bad.
It kept my interest throughout, but there's
some parts... I wasn't like, come on, end this movie.
Yeah, there were some parts where I was like, I got a little cringy a little bit at some points and stuff. And
yeah, there was a couple of those. Mm.
Yeah.
The next movie I watched, you watched later in the month, but... did you watch Dunkirk?
Nope.
You never got around to watching it?
Nope.
So I watched Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Which is another movie.
Well, like Dunkirk.
Would have been better in the theater.
Nailed it!
I didn't see it in theater because I'm not a huge war person. And Christopher Nolan's movies... Christopher Nolan's movies are hit or miss with me. I kind of wish I did see it in the theater because it definitely was a theater-type movie.
And also, you're not a One Direction fan.
They broke up, so it's just Harry Styles.
Whatever.
After watching the movie, I'm like, I don't even know which guy was Harry Styles. There's so many people in this movie.
They all look the same in this on IMDb. I'm like, oh, nope, that's not him.
But it takes place during...
World War II?
I want to say World War II.
Yep.
Dunkirk. I guess this is a huge battle in...
Belgium, British Army, France, and German.
Yeah, but like... In the U.S., we didn't know much about this battle, like, but it was huge there. Like, you know how, like, Pearl Harbor was huge here.
Because
like,
it was this, here.
Yeah. So we don't care about other people in America.
Exactly.
So this story was something that a lot of people, like Christopher Nolan and stuff, is like, how has no one done a movie on this? So they did it.
France. That's where it took place.
Okay. Yeah, so there's this... Dunkirk is... I want to say it's a village in France.
Yep, Dunkirk, France.
That's... that the troops end up getting to, but now they're cornered. And the Nazis... Yeah, Nazis are shooting down, like, ships that are on this... What?
Sorry, I think it's shooting down like the ships are flying. Like, no, you stay in the water, okay?
I was gonna say shooting down planes, but they were there to bomb boats. So there's Nazis bombing these ships and stuff, and there's I don't want to say pedestrian. What is civilian?
Pedestrian.
Civilians that are taking their like fishing boats and stuff to go and rescue
the soldiers?
People, like pilots whose planes have crashed or the soldiers who are on these ships.
Okay.
So there's like a ton of these civilians that are doing this, but they're putting their lives in danger because they have no gunpowder. They're just, you know, driving, floating, whatever you want to call it.
They're doing their own war effort.
Right. So the Nazis are trying to shoot down these boats and try to kill as many people as possible. There's like three people that are in planes trying to shoot down these bombers. Mm-hmm. So you see it from the ship's point of view, like all these people on the ship. You see from the civilian boaters' point of view. And then you see from these gunmen that are shooting down the bombers. So there's like three stories going on at once.
Yeah.
And it jumps between them. And it's pretty interesting. When I watched it, I started questioning, like, why war?
Yeah.
Like, you want to shoot these people who are just fishermen? Like, what does that prove? Like, what is your outcome? Like, it just started me questioning, like, what's the point of war? Like,
I mean, I've always been questioning
war. Right. But I mean, I felt like this did a good job because these people were defenseless.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we're just sitting ducks and targets, and we're going to be fucked. And the colonels and whatever are like, we got to stop these people. We got to protect as many people as we can, and we just do the best we can, and hopefully we'll get support soon, and we'll be fine. So it is kind of a downer of a movie. So a lot of people die. Yeah,
a lot of people died in World War II, for sure.
But like I said, I'm not a big war person.
Yeah.
But it was very well done visually and audibly. The sound effects and everything are pretty good.
How's that in surround sound?
It was good, but I feel like the surround sound in the theater is going to be better than
yeah.
Yeah, because you hear the flyovers and the bombs in the distance and all that stuff. I gave it a 6.
Okay.
Mainly because I'm not a war person. I would probably not see that movie again.
Okay.
It was... In some parts, it did feel long and drawn out.
Like most Nolan movies, though.
Yeah, and most war movies. but I give it props for making me feel a certain way and thinking a certain way. And for that, I give it a lot of credit. So I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going into it.
Okay.
Because, like I said, we didn't see it in the theater and we didn't really plan on it.
Yeah.
But now I kind of regret that, but... I'm glad I saw it. It was worth watching. If you're a big war person and you haven't seen it, I obviously say check it out. It's very well done.
All right.
So.
The next movie that I had watched... Oh, boy, didn't even have to get my thing ready.
Because the last ones I've watched, you've seen. All of these you've seen, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
The next movie I watched, I don't remember if we... I saw a movie by Darren Aronofsky... called Noah.
Oh, yeah, I did watch that one.
Yeah, do you pull that up while I talk about it?
Yeah.
I have it pulled up. So this up. Is the only...
I watched it in April 2014.
Wow, you pulled that up faster than I thought you were going to.
No, because I knew you watched it, so I put it in my notes.
Oh. So, yeah, Darren Aronofsky...
April 2014.
Directed a movie about Noah and Noah's Ark. Jason explained it in April 2014.
He wrote a graphic novel.
Yeah.
Called Noah, and it was like... a different interpretation of the story from the Bible.
Yeah.
So this isn't the story from the Bible, and people went to the movie thinking that's what it was. But
yeah.
It's inspired by that story is the best way I can say it. But I've read the graphic novel.
Yeah.
So then when I went to the movie, I knew what I was expecting. Obviously, it's going to be more visual and all that stuff in the theater than in the graphic novel.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's loosely based on... I can't even say loosely based on. It's inspired by. Like, all the stuff I knew about the Noah story in the Bible is pretty much there, plus a whole bunch of extra shit.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you know the story of Noah and Noah's Ark, it's the gist of that, but there's tiny differences, like where the rock monsters, I loved...
The rock monsters are cool.
Like, that was really cool, and I guess that's what...
I loved that scene so much. Like, to me, watching Noah, I was like... Yeah, I never thought about it that way, because it's raining for 40 days and 40 nights. Yeah, it's going to flood, do this stuff, but that's a lot of time, and people want to get on that freaking boat.
Yeah.
So I was like, that was an interesting point of view I never thought of. Like, so these rock monsters are basically protecting the ark from all these people who want to get on it that don't deserve to live.
Well, also, I just like the creatures in general. They looked awesome.
Yeah.
They moved like... They remind me of, like, stop-motion movements because they're, like, just, like, moving the rocks around as they walked. I love Jennifer Connelly. She was great. I love Emma Watson. She was great. Russell Crowe was awesome. Anthony Hopkins was great.
Anthony Hopkins was... looking for berries the whole time.
Just looking for berries. Methuselah as Methuselah. But, yeah, it was neat. I wouldn't,
if you're really a religious person, you'd probably get very mad at this movie.
I was actually talking with Mike last night about Darren Aronofsky movies, and I think this is my least favorite one of his, but I still gave it a 6.5.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I saw this in the theater.
Yeah.
I thought it was amazing. Back in April 2014, I gave it an 8.5.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and it's weird because I don't own it. Because usually if I give it an 8 and above, it's usually something I end up buying.
Like, I'm not
much I didn't buy it because I was hoping for a 3D edition.
Okay.
Because I saw it in 3D in the theater.
Yeah.
And I don't think it ever came out in 3D here.
Yeah.
So that's why I never bought it.
Makes sense.
Because that's probably why I also gave it an 8.5, because the 3D was amazing.
Oh, okay, you saw it in 3D.
Yeah, the theater I saw it in 3D.
Oh, that's cool. I bought it at Half Price Books for $5.
Like the Rain and the Rock Monsters and all that
stuff. Oh, I can imagine that being cool. And the angel parts and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Next movie I watched, oh boy. I watched the one, next one that I watched was with you.
Yeah.
Deadpool 7.
Nope. Deadpool, the second one.
Sorry, spoiler alert. I gave it a 7.
So, okay.
I hate to bury the lead.
Oh, shit.
When did we watch the first one?
That's what I'm like,
oh, shit. I should have done
that. I didn't write that note down.
Oh, no.
I'm going to get to it. But anyway, Deadpool is based on a comic book that I'm not a huge fan of.
Ditto.
I have a couple Deadpool comics because everyone says how amazing he is. So I've bought them, but I never really got into the comics. And this is obviously aimed for the people who like the comics or the type of people who like the comics. So if you read the comics of Deadpool and you haven't seen the movies, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, this is what you're made for.
I watched the first one. I think you watched it the same weekend.
Yeah, I was watching it at the same time as you.
Okay, the first one?
Maybe. Not the same time.
No, but I think it was the same weekend.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, no, we weren't sitting on the couch at the same time.
Right. May 2016 is when we saw the first one, and that was when it came out on DVD.
Yeah, you brought up my coworker.
Yeah. I gave it a 7.5 May 16th.
I'm going to check.
Holy shit, really? I gave it a 7.5?
Oh, boy.
I was very nice to some of these movies back then.
Yeah, you didn't know. Because it was like one of the first couple years where, like, boy, actually rating movies, and then later you go, there's a lot of movies, and there's a lot of good and bad ones. Like, I imagine, like, lately I feel like I'm just rating everything like six and 6.5.
Yeah, mine's a lot of sevens. This one, Deadpool, a generic story. Deadpool is a character who was dying of cancer, got DNA from Wolverine to heal, and now he can't die. Right?
No, he didn't get the DNA from Wolverine.
He was part of the same experiment as Wolverine.
Yeah, he was part of Weapon X.
But I thought he got, like, Wolverine's DNA or something.
No, he also had, I don't fucking know exactly.
Because they were trying to cure his cancer.
Yeah, they're trying to cure his cancer, but maybe, who knows?
So then once he realizes that he can't die and he can heal himself, he becomes a superhero. The second movie is the one we saw.
I should actually just start saying things like, yeah, Deadpool, he didn't get the, and then, like, just see all the nerds. The two nerds, like Craig and Tony, you dumb nerds.
He's a ripoff of DC character. But Deadpool 2 takes place... I don't know if I should tell the beginning part.
No, don't.
Okay.
Because that was a good part of it. Like, the relationship stuff in the movie was pretty great because it actually had relationship stuff.
Much like the first movie,
character,
you see the beginning part happening, and then it cuts back previously, and then it builds up to that part.
Yeah.
The first one did the same thing with the bridge part.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it's later in the movie, but it's also the very first thing you see.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so Deadpool, there's this kid who has superpowers.
Yeah.
And he goes to try to stop the kid from hurting people. And this guy from the future comes...
Cable
comes to try to stop the kid from living.
Yeah, you... Yeah.
So Deadpool's like, I must protect this kid.
Yeah, because Cable wants to kill him for reasons that show up in the movie, mm-hmm. and Deadpool's like, because, well, obviously he's from the future, so things that he does, he wants to stop it, like,
yeah,
a pre-Hitler type thing.
Yeah, basically the kid becomes a huge villain in the future.
Yeah, and he murders
so he's like, if I kill him as a kid, then he won't do all the damage what he does when he's an adult.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, Deadpool doesn't know this, and he's like, we can't kill him. Life is important.
Mm-hmm.
Because he learns that at the very beginning. Life is very important.
And then he, like, puts together a super team, the X-Force.
Yep.
And tries to stop Cable from doing this. And kind of stopping the kid, too. Because the kid's trying to, like, wants to go and murder somebody.
Yeah, the kid is trying to be badass because...
Because he was in an orphanage. He has no parents.
Yeah, he doesn't really give a shit. They put him in the box, which is like a... because he was causing so much of a ruckus, that they put him in the box, which is a prison for depowered mutants, where they put these collars on him. It's actually in the comics and stuff.
Yeah. I just want to say that I hate the whole, hey, you put this collar on and their powers go away.
Yeah.
How is that physically possible, scientifically? Like, you'd have to have that collar specifically for that one specific person.
Yeah.
You can't have one collar and stop some mutants from... every single one. Well, like, that doesn't make sense at all.
In the movies, there's a certain, like, chromosome or right. a certain...
But I'm just thinking, like, even people who have the same disease taking the same medicine doesn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand how...
Also, I kind of want to see what happens when, like, someone like the Beast puts it on. Does all his hair go away? Like,
I just feel like these collars are a cop-out. Like, we just don't want them to use their powers here.
Yeah, like, so, does Angel's wings go back into his body, or do they just stop working? Do they just hang down like dead limbs? Like, how does that work?
I don't know.
But anyways, I have proof, because I just looked it up. I gave the first one a 6.5.
Wow.
Because
that's what I gave this one. I gave this Deadpool 2 a 6.5.
Really? I gave it a 7. Because Domino was one of the main reasons why I was excited for the movie. She was
awesome.
I would love to see just a Domino. Like,
she was, I think, the best character in the movie.
Like, yeah, because I agree too. Because I'm not a huge...
She didn't have enough dialogue. No. She didn't have enough scenes. Like, so when she did have a scene or did have dialogue, it was awesome.
But also, when she didn't have enough dialogue, her reactions, mm-hmm. her facial reactions and, like, expressions made it...
And she was very realistic of a person.
Because, like we said, we don't care about Deadpool, and you could tell she kind of didn't either. So whenever he said, like, some...
she's relatable.
Some, like, quippy joke or whatever, mm-hmm. she kind of looked at him like, what the fuck you saying? But, yeah, the actress did an amazing job of pulling that character off. Cable is pretty fun, too.
Yeah, he was good. Brilliant.
And... up until the end credits and like the pre-credits and mid-credits, it didn't get too fourth wall breaking.
Yeah.
But then they just fucking went and meta and just... Oh, God. I don't know. I'm not going to say anything.
But you know fans of Deadpool wanted that.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, just the fact, like in the movie... he runs into this kid when he's, like, fighting a villain, and he's like, wow, you're a mutant or whatever. He's like, yeah, and he, like, just signs his box of Wheaties and, like, tosses it to the kid, and it's, like, signed Ryan Reynolds. Like, haha, because that's the actor. And then later in the movie, he, as one of the end credit things, he interacts with Ryan Reynolds. I'm like, this, you're breaking your own broken joke.
Yeah. Are you Ryan Reynolds or are you not?
Yeah. God damn it. But... if I ignore all that stuff, I give it a 7.
Okay. I gave this one a 6.5.
The next movie I watched was Ouija, The Origin of Evil.
Ouija, Origin of Evil. I heard this one was good. This is not the first Ouija movie, but I heard it was the only good one.
Wait, did you say this? Oh, okay. I was... not say, but... We're showing how many movies we have on our hands, and I was like, we saw at least as many movies. And like
all three of them.
Did you forget one?
Okay. No, they're the same three you saw.
Good. Well, I have more than that.
I know, but I'm saying all I have left is the ones you saw. So Origin of Evil
Ouija
is a prequel to the other Ouija movies, which I have not seen because they looked terrible.
There's a lot of bad ones, apparently.
But I heard this one was really good, and it showed up on HBO, so I'm like, I'm going to watch it. And I was pleasantly surprised by it. So after I watched it, I told Scott, I'm like, you should watch this movie because it's actually really good. Because it's very rare that we find good horror movies.
Yeah.
Because everything seems so cliche now that it's the same thing over and over and whatever. But this... come on, let me type. Oh, you bitch.
Whoa.
Ouija, Origin of Evil, follows this mother who has two kids, right?
Two daughters.
Yeah, two daughters. Her husband died a while ago. And she started a seance business where people come... And she contacts the spirits and for the people and makes money off of it.
But it's a
scam.
Yeah, she's got
these contraptions under the table to make the candles go out and stuff to like move
and the table and stuff. Yeah,
yeah. And someone mentions you should get a Ouija board because it'll add to
because the kids are at a party. And one of the girls pulled out a Ouija board.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, hey, Mom, you should check this out. And she goes, all right, I'll take a look into it. And then, of course, you see her, like, trying things like magnets, like moving.
Yeah, she's trying to find the table. She's trying to find a way to, like, manipulate the Ouija board to move to her willing.
Because I'm guessing.
But in reality, she summons spirits.
I'm guessing that must have been around the time the Ouija board came out. Because they're like,
oh yeah,
the way they made it seem was
1976
like,
is
67. Where 67.
1967 is when this movie took place.
Yeah. So I don't know when the real Ouija board came out, but they made it seem like oh, check this out, it's a new thing type thing at the party.
Uh huh.
Although I did love that because the girls are playing at the party. And then the one girl's like, she's like afraid of like anytime anything happens, she's like screaming. That part made me laugh a lot because she just screamed at every little thing.
It came out in 1890.
So probably, yeah, it was pretty new at the time.
I don't know when Hasbro like marketed.
Yeah, I was gonna say like whenever like the like mass marketed. Cause I'm sure Ouija boards came out and whatever.
The patent was in 1890.
Oh, it was patented in 1890?
Yeah.
People were making homemade ones for a while. Selling on their Etsy pages. Or
1901, it went into mass production.
1901?
They look awesome back then, too.
Well, yeah, because they're not all shitty. Yeah, it's like, that's an awesome font. Yeah, like, now they're all just like fucking shitty. I don't even know if we still have ours because it was glow-in-the-dark.
Yeah, it didn't. You can't slide because the glow-in-the-dark paint was... poop.
Yeah, because it, like, it's all rigid because it captures light. I don't know how paint works. Glow-in-the-dark paint. Anyways, they summon an evil.
Yeah, so she's a fake seance person, but then she's able to make the board work and do what she wants because she's talking to spirits.
Well, the little girl did.
Yeah, but didn't she bring someone over too and then it worked?
Yeah, but the little girl was like basically...
But
like,
yeah, the little girl is the one that made everything work.
Yeah. Because the little girl, the mother's like, oh, trying this and stuff, that, but then the little girl would come in and help, and she'd be like, here, like this, and then she'd like just be basically, like with the girl's help, she'd be moving around, and the mom's like, wow, this is great, you know how to do this.
Yeah.
You're following my footsteps.
And the little girl did a great job of being really creepy, like just staring in the dark. And
yeah, again with horror movies that they just kind of start... using the same tropes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are certain parts where the girl was, like, just making weird faces and, like, leaning back and shaking and stuff. And I'm like, I've seen this all before.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what they're trying to do, but it, at some points I'm just like, yes, we get it.
Yeah, it was weird because it was very cliche, but they did a lot of stuff, too, that was different enough to make it stand out, in my opinion. I don't know. I think I felt like they did just a really good job of taking a a generic story and a generic plot.
Yeah.
And putting a little twist on it that made it a little more creepier than I thought it was going to be, and very well done.
Yeah, it reminded me of like what Conjuring did.
Yeah, exactly.
Where they took like a lot of very generic things and then it's like said, here's the slightly different plot, and then just like kind of enhanced certain aspects of a lot of generic things.
But I don't know. I did not like The Conjuring.
I feel like I have to give it a second chance.
Conjuring?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I gave Ouija, Origin of Evil, a 7.5.
I gave it a 6.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I liked it. And I haven't seen the other one, so I don't care.
Speaking of horror movies and trying to make them new and different, I watched one called XX.
Oh, it's the prequel to Triple X.
Yep. Yep.
With Xander, whatever.
Vin Diesel.
The character's name was Xander.
Cage?
Xander Cage. Is
that it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
I never saw the movies, but I know that.
I didn't. So
that's why it's called X.
I think, I don't want to guess. I'm going to guess. I think it's called XX.
Because it's women.
Yeah, it's four women.
It's all made by women.
Yeah, and the women
have directors.
Women have two X chromosomes, and men have Y and an X. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, because that's right, the newest XXX is called The Return of Xander Cage. That's
okay.
That's why I knew that name.
So anyway, XX was, it was an anthology of movies, a horror anthology, where they had four parts to it, written and directed by women, and then they had this weird umbrella story arc between them that didn't make any fucking sense. Now, I wanted this to be good, because, to me,
When I saw the trailer, it looked like it was going to be good.
Yeah, and I'm like...
And I like anthology movies.
Yes, and I do want more women directing movies, because...
They see it from a different point of view.
Yes, exactly. Now, I'm going to quick give a synopsis of each part of the movie, without giving too much away, and without spoiling it, I guess. First part was called The Box. It's about a
woman's box.
Jesus Christ. It was a Christmas present box. It's about a family of four. The mother and the two kids are on a subway. This old man is sitting there, and the kid's like, "What's in the box?" "It's a Christmas present. Do you want to see?" The kid goes, "Okay." So the boy looks in the box, and then he just sits back, and he looks kind of disturbed a little bit. Suddenly that night, it's for supper. He doesn't want to eat. And mother's like, "Oh, okay." He's like, "I'm not hungry." And then that goes on and on and on. And eventually, he's almost dying because he's not eating anything. Then he whispers to his sister, and suddenly she's not eating anything. What's the mystery of the box? Spoiler alert, you don't fucking find out. And all the characters just felt two-dimensional. It didn't feel like there was a main character in that story.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, God. It didn't. There was no substance to it. Ha ha, because food.
Maybe that's why.
The second part was called Birthday Party. Yep. I wasn't sure if I was just describing it. The next part is called Birthday Party, where this woman, this rich woman, is throwing a birthday party for her daughter that day. And the neighbor's like, "Oh, I saw your husband came home last night." She's like, "No, my husband didn't come home last night." She looks into her husband's office. He's dead. He killed himself with an overdose. Now she's trying to hide the body in this weird sort of black comedy type thing while all these people are trying to come over and help her with a birthday party. Yeah. The third part was called Don't Fall, where it was probably one of the most generic horror movies, where four college-age kids go and hang out and they go hiking, but they find out they're one of the guys is like bribed a park ranger to go out there because it's like ancient burial ground type sacred lands, and turns out there's a creature that's killing people out there, and then that kills a bunch of them. And then the last part was her only living son, which was like if Rosemary's Baby jumped ahead about 17 years, but it wasn't good. If you want to watch it, You can, if you want to hear more in depth about what happened, email me and I'll tell you. But I gave it a 4 out of 10. So I guess basically a 1 point for each part of the movie. Overlapping between each part of the movie, there was like a stop animation of a dollhouse that walked around and ate bugs.
The dollhouse did?
Yeah.
Not a doll?
It was a dollhouse, but then like a part of the wall would turn around to be a doll's face. And it'd open up its doors, and there's like bugs and rats would walk in, and then it'd like eat them. Yeah, I don't get it. I really don't get it. So 4 out of 10. The next movie I watched was a horror movie that was another. It was a remake of a horror movie that was really good. I watched Carrie. This is the Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yeah, I want to see that one.
2000 and something movie, whatever it was. It was like 2008, I feel like, or 2010. I don't know. But it's Carrie, but they remade it. Now, I guess they remade it to follow the book a little closer.
Yeah, I think that was the reason they're trying to... Well, plus they wanted... They're like, well, people like the original movie, let's make it again.
Yeah.
But make it more accurate to the book.
And they did modernize it a tiny bit. Because if you ever watch Carrie, the main plot of the movie is a girl becomes a woman by getting her period, and that kind of awakens some sort of telekinetic powers. And her mother is super religious and like basically just shelters her from the world. So when she first has her period, she freaks out because she thinks she's dying. Because obviously she knows nothing about that kind of stuff because her mother's like, that's a bad thing. Those parts down there, your dirty pillows. She refers to her boobs as dirty pillows. I'm glad they put that in the movie. Because that was a quote from the book. But it happens during gym class because Carrie's a very unpopular girl. So, like, when she has her period in the shower...
They make fun of her.
They make fun of her. And they start pulling, like, tampons on and, like, throwing at her at the shower and, like, just chanting, plug it up. Plug it up. But of course, since it's modernized, one of the girls is recording it on her phone, which comes back later in the movie because...
I feel like that's what would happen.
Yeah. But Sue Snell, the girl who is one of the bullies, but then slowly starts like feeling more for Carrie, she turns to Carrie's side so fucking fast in this movie. Like, she like... When everyone's, like, throwing, like, plug it up, she immediately, you see her face go, oh no, this is wrong.
Like, in the book, it wasn't until, like, the very end when she's like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Otherwise, she doesn't really speak up at all.
Well, and the thing, like, sending her boyfriend to prom with her and some of that. Yeah. But, like, she's on Carrie's side immediately. Chloe Grace Moretz didn't work as a Carrie for me.
No.
I don't know. I guess because I feel... Well, I guess she's 18 now, so I guess she's not ugly enough to be hated by everyone in school. Like, she's pretty. She's a pretty girl, or a pretty woman, I guess. So it felt really weird for, like, everyone just to hate on her, because at least Sissy Spacek, she was kind of tall and gangly and stuff, and there's times where her hair's a mess and stuff, like, where Chloe Grace Moretz is like, oh, this is what she looks like now. How are they going to make her look better for the prom? Oh, they put her hair up and a little more makeup on. Great. Okay, that's a huge transformation. But, like, the best part about the movie, because the movie was just not very great, in my opinion, was when the prom scene happened. That was a fun 15-20 minutes. Although I think I feel like they went a little overboard on some of the stuff, but they did pull some awesome...
They had 20 buckets of blood.
No. Like, she flew.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like her powers and stuff?
Yeah, like when her powers were happening, like the massacre that happens in that gymnasium is amazing. And then when she's like just walking through town and stuff, that part was awesome. But then at one point she was flying, and then she flew down from the stage. And it was like, wah. So I gave it a 6. I mean, remaking old good movies.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, if it's good, why remake it?
And this is, like, they made Carrie with Sissy Spacek. And that was good.
Mm-hmm.
They made Rage Carrie 2. in the 90s, and that was okay. Then they remade a made-for-TV movie of Carrie that they wanted to turn into a series mm-hmm. because Dead Zone did well. Mm-hmm. And that, I heard, was the most the most similar to the book, mm-hmm. but then they left it open-ended at the end.
Right,
because Carrie survives because they wanted to keep a series going.
Yeah.
And then this one...
I don't know how that would have worked for a TV show.
I don't know either.
Because she's might have been a bad guy at the end of the movie.
The thing is, I have the DVD of the pilot, but it didn't work. I need to find a DVD player that will read it. Mm. But I gave it a 6. I gave the Chloe Grace Moretz version. I guess I could say the director's name, but I didn't look it up. So, I gave it a 6. The next movie we watched at the same time.
Yeah. It's Han Solo.
Solo, the Han Solo story.
Solo, the Star Wars story.
That's it.
A Star Wars story.
Oh, I was wrong. A Star story.
Yeah, we went and saw that. If you listen to our podcast a lot, you know that Scott and I aren't huge Star Wars people.
Not really.
We've seen them.
Yep.
But we aren't excited when new ones come out. We'll just go, we'll see them eventually.
We see them because they're such a huge pop culture.
Right.
Thing,
yeah.
So we say, well, we need to be at least have our pulse on the front of pop culture. So we should at least watch it,
mm-hmm.
so we know and references.
With our movie pass thing, it's not like we're paying. Yeah, we're just paying for exactly. our time. But anyway, I'm not a huge Star Wars person, but even I was like during the trailers and stuff, I'm like, he's not Harrison Ford Han Solo.
Yeah,
this is gonna be bad. But we saw it anyway, where I know a lot of people didn't go see it because they're like, the trailer, it looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people didn't like The Last Jedi.
The first trailer.
And I did.
The first trailer didn't look good, but when they released the second one, I was like, okay, this looks good.
And I was like, I'm going to go see it for Glover.
Glover.
As Lando, which wasn't as great as I was hoping.
Yeah.
But it's still good.
Yeah.
So. Solo is like basically the precursor of the Han Solo character.
Precursor.
Well, like background? if you've seen the other Star Wars movies and you see Han Solo, this is like the young version of him.
Yeah, yeah.
It follows him finding all the things that you're like, hey, I wonder where he got the gun. I wonder where he got his name. I wonder how he met Chewbacca. I wonder how he got the Millennium Falcon.
I wonder if they'll ever mention when he went through that one place that took him 12 parsecs or whatever.
Yeah, the run.
Kessel run.
So it's like all the stuff that you expect in the movie was in the movie.
How did he meet Lando?
Yeah. But I must say that the interaction between Han and Chewie in this movie was pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was, after the fact, I was watching stuff online about it. The guy who wrote the script actually wrote lines for Chewbacca. Uh-huh. So, like, even though he's not saying the lines, he was thinking the lines when he said it.
Uh-huh.
And then you had reaction from Han Solo. Like, Han Solo's reactions to Chewie's lines were amazing.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that guy did as Han Solo amazing. But in the trailers, it looked like he wasn't a good Han Solo.
Yeah.
But in the movie, when you're actually watching it, mm-hmm. You forget about that.
I'll say that is one thing I don't like about prequels, though, is like all those things we just listed
mm-hmm.
all happened in within a week. Like, you know, everything, it's like, like, oh, like, we hear all these things, like, it couldn't happen over a span of years. It's like, hey, he got this, 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 and all these things happened within a week. The rest of his life is boring, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, the basis plot is, like, yeah, he's trying to get money because his love, the woman he loves,
is kidnapped, enslaved.
Is taken by the Empire or whatever they're called. And he wants to get money so like he can like just get off this shitty planet they're on.
And rescue her.
And then basically so they live their life together. I don't want to go into a lot of details because that's half the fun of the movie, but they he gets into this smuggling type operation that kind of blows wide open, and he has to kind of fix what happened. And then a lot of things happen.
But it was interesting because it was more of a smuggler type movie than a Force and Jedi type movie. Well, yeah,
that's the thing I don't like about most of the Star Wars movies is because it's, hey, what's this movie about? There's one government or sort of like, just like, hey, here's this government going against this government. All right, well, now this government's taking over this. And it's a lot of politics. That's why I don't like certain things about Game of Thrones. It's majority politics. Star Wars is a majority of politics. I don't give a shit about politics, especially in movies. Like, I know politics happen in real life, and I'm going to watch a movie and go, oh, look at this giant fascist regime that's happening, and they're not letting anyone be humans. Oh, that's happening right outside our door, except it's not in space. You know, it's like, oh, great. So, like, and then
movies are supposed to be an escape.
Yeah, and also knowing, like, who, like, oh, this country, and then instead of, like, going, who, what country likes this country, and this country likes this country, it's like that, but also this planet of people, and this planet's part of this treaty. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, that's how the first Star Wars movie, like, episode one starts. It's like, oh, they're going to do trade agreements. I'm like, really? That's the plot? Awesome. So at least this was like, hey, it's an action smuggler movie where it's like these people are trying to steal this from these people. That's great. I might be too dumb to understand other Star Wars movies. Maybe that's why I don't like them, because I'm not smart enough. Because this is like, hey, they're trying to steal these because they're worth money. These guys need money. All right, now let's watch some action-y, fun driving around and flying moments.
Yeah, pretty much. I gave it a 6.
I actually enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I know you didn't care for it as much.
I mean, I can't say... I enjoyed it as much as I thought I was going to.
Okay.
Like, it didn't... Like, I went in with certain expectations. Some of it was proven wrong, but other ones were worse than I thought and whatever. But, like, everything I was expecting happened.
Yeah.
Like, there were no twists and turns that were unexpected. There was no, like, added story, like, oh, I want to know. I mean, there is a little bit of, like, I want to know more about this, but yeah. I just think they're opening up
a Pandora's box.
Right. I think they're just opening, I was going to say can of worms.
Oh.
Where this is, like, the second Star Wars story. I just think they're leading into more of the Star Wars stories, because, yeah, like, the Ben Kenobi movie that's coming out, like, I'm sure it'll have some kind of tie-in with this and all that stuff. So I think they're just trying to expand the expanded universe, and I gave it a 6.
I liked that the fight scenes were fight scenes because there were no Jedi in this movie. So it was like, it was people literally going, I need to kill you. I have a gun or a sword or my bare fists. And they had to fight each other, like, legitimate. So, like, they actually had fight scenes that were pretty cool, instead of just going, hey, I believe in magic, and I can make you fly away and die. You know, it's like, I don't know. It was more grounded and more fun for me in that sense. I gave it a 7.
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the next one I watched was with you.
Yeah, then do it. Let's do it. The next one we watched was a movie called The Watch. We watched The Watch.
Watch The Watch.
The Watch is a comedy movie.
Now, before... Did you know much about this movie at all before going into it?
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing about it. I didn't know if it was a comedy. I didn't know if it was an action movie. I didn't know what it was.
I saw the trailer for it when it came out.
Yeah, because you bought the movie.
Right. I got it in the bargain bin at Walmart.
Yeah.
But I mainly bought it because it's done by Akiva...
Schaefer?
Yeah, not Goldsman, but Akiva Schaefer from Lonely Island. This is one of his movies he directed. And it had good reviews. No, it didn't. I don't know where I heard...
Oh, Jesus!
I don't know where I heard the good reviews.
Oh, okay. It had good reviews. I'm like... No, it didn't. And I'm not even seeing it when you're looking at it.
But people were telling... I don't remember where I saw that people were saying it was good. But anyway, I'm like, yeah, it's for something. I'll pick it up. I like Ben Stiller. I think he's pretty funny.
IMDb cared a little bit more for it than Rotten Tomatoes.
I like Ben Stiller. I like, what's his name from IT Crowd?
Richard Ayoade?
Ayoade? Ayoade?
It's A-Y-O-A-D-E. It's like mostly vowels.
There's too many vowels, because I bet Y is a vowel in that.
Yeah, you're just missing U and I. There's too many A's.
There's only one consonant in his last name.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's in Moss from IT Crowd, if you ever watched that show, which, if you haven't, I highly recommend it. It's hilarious. Will Forte's in it, and he's amazing. I'm not a huge fan of Jonah Hill. And
Vince Vaughn.
Well, Vince Vaughn's not even listed in the top six people on this. Well, on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, okay.
Vince Vaughn is hit or miss. Jonah Hill, I'm not a huge fan of, even though I did like 21 Jump Street. So I'm like, I'll give it a shot. We'll watch it. It basically starts, like, Ben Stiller's character likes creating clubs.
Yeah. And he likes being involved in the community.
Yeah. So he starts this neighborhood watch club.
Like Lucy Hale from Truth or Dare could have been his daughter.
Right.
Like, that's the kind of person.
Yeah. So he starts this neighborhood watch. He gets a couple people who are interested in it. And then Ben Stiller, well, he's the one who started it, but Vince Vaughn, like, is Vince Vaughn, so he tries to take over and is like, hey, we're doing this, and this. We're just going to call it The Watch, blah, 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 blah. But then, like, crazy shit starts happening.
Well, the reason why they made The Watch, though.
Yeah, I was trying to remember.
The guard at the store at Costco.
Oh, yeah, because Ben Stiller works at Costco, and his coworker got murdered.
He's a manager.
Yeah. The night watchman guy gets murdered at Costco, and he feels the police aren't doing anything to solve this crime, and Will Forte plays the police officer, who I think is an amazing character.
And also Mel Rodriguez, who's in Community, and that Will Arnett show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's, some of that.
Yeah, he was Last Man on Earth.
Yes, Last Man on Earth as well.
Yeah, because he was the guard. And yeah, so he creates a neighborhood watch because he doesn't think the police are doing enough. So they create this watch group, and I'm not going to give too much away, but weird shit starts happening.
Yeah.
And Scott didn't see it coming, but I did because I saw the trailer. I thought it was entertaining.
I liked Vince Vaughn because he was such a shitty douche character who was like clueless about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved that aspect of him. Like,
see, like, that's his character in most things. So, like, he's just playing himself.
But in comparison to, like, Ben Stiller, who's like, hey, let's do this. I want to help everybody. And then he's just blown away by a 3D TV. He's like, look at this. They're coming out at you and stuff. And, like, and then they try and get the meetings together for the neighborhood watch. He's like, hey, guys, I got some beer in my house. Let's check it out. And, like, no one's taking it seriously. And it just, I don't know. It was like Ben Stiller was the straight character, and he actually just like ruined everything because everyone else is like more interested in like what Vince Vaughn's character wants. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we have beer and like we watch the game and stuff, and Ben Stiller's just like, someone died.
Yeah.
Like, we're trying to figure this out. My friend died. I don't know. And then he made the bowling shirts and stuff. And
yeah, I thought it was entertaining. It wasn't anything crazy.
Yeah.
But it reminded me so much of World's End.
I was like, Seth Rogen was one of the writers.
Yeah. Reminded me of, like, World's End, but World's End was better. I gave it a 6.5. I thought it was worth the $5 I spent on it.
But Jared Stern is also one of the writers who helped write the Lego Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
And also The Internship.
Oh, yeah, another Vince Vaughn movie.
Vince Vaughn. I gave it a 6.5.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I know, I was loading. Now, the last movie... Oh, I gotta check out my sheet. The last movie I watched was... was also on my list of horror movies. And I watched the first one in May of 2015, The Woman in Black. Mm. So I watched The Woman in Black 2, colon... Uh-oh, what was the woman... In Black 2, Angel of Death. Yep. So this movie takes place like 40 years after the first one. It's during, I think, World War II. Oh boy, oh. They probably have matching things at Dunkirk. But it's during World War II. And this woman, the main character, she is... she's like running a orphanage type foster home type thing. But since there's so many air raids in London and this is, and all these things happening, they decide to take all the children and
all the children
and go off to this house way out in the fields, like way out in the swamp type area on this little island, to try to keep them safe. But of course, they have to be careful because there's still like people bombing and everything like that. So they go out there and stuff. And of course, from the first movie, the woman in black won.
Oh, as in number one, sorry.
Yeah.
The woman in black won the first
movie. Well, technically she did, I guess, because she's back in this one. Because when you find out in the first movie, something happened to her kid and she blames everyone and then like basically tries to kill children because she lost hers, so you can't have yours.
If I can't have them, you can't have them.
So bringing a whole wagon full of children to this house is bad news. It had the feel of a movie that you just like just want to watch that's like entertaining. I can't remember who the main character was because all these women looked the same, but one of them was in a lot of Harry Potter movies. I have nothing much to say about it.
ending this podcast on a strong note.
Sure am. Well, I was looking back. The first one. I was like, since it's a sequel, I was expecting it to kind of tie into the first one. They make hardly any mention of the first one at all because in the first one, like he's there to figure out all this stuff, like tie up any sort of loose ends from the people that live there and like figure out insurance and stuff like that. And this one, they're like, yeah, the house is here, just go in it. All right, cool. And then like one of the kids ends up dead because he drowned in the water and like and all this other stuff. And yeah, I gave it a 6 and I just looked back. I also gave the first one a 6.
When was that?
May of 2015.
All right.
But I think I enjoyed this one a little more just because it didn't feel... I don't know. Never mind. I was going to say...
It didn't feel like a...
Well, yeah, the Harry Potter one. It felt like they were trying... really, they were like being super dark and like really creepy. This one, it felt like they weren't trying to be as creepy, but also they did have like a bunch of weird sort of jump scares, but not really. They didn't feel like the same movie, but they had the same setting. You know? I thought I'd just double check, make sure I got everything on my list. All right. I forgot to mention, that was on my list of horror movies. Otherwise, I wouldn't have watched it. Woman in Black 2.
Black Men in Black 2.
I bought it.
Black Men in Black and Women in Black. Ha ha ha.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, shit. It's just one, though.
It's just the one man.
They don't need as many, because she does all
the... Man in Black.
Does all the job.
The Man in Black, that's from...
Dark Tower. The house. Yeah. It's alive. Oh, shit! Full circle! So the movies that I watched this month that were on my list were I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. I gave that a 5. Burnt Offerings, gave that a 6.5. XX, gave that a 4. And The Woman in Black 2 gave it a 6.
The two 3D movies I watched was Legends of the Guardians... at 5.5, and Pacific Rim at 7.5.
But the worst movie I watched this month was XX.
And my worst movie of the month was Truth or Dare with a 5.
XX was a 4, like I said. And Brigsy Bear with an 8 was my best movie.
And Atomic Blonde with an 8 was my best movie.
Yeah, well, like 8s. If you have any movies...
Recommendations.
I know Craig always tells me in passing, and I'm like, dude, you gotta email me, I'll forget.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Eric at work, he keeps giving me all sorts of movies to watch. I'm like, I'll watch them, but I don't remember. I have a stack of them I'll mention when I watch any of his, because I watched one in June already. But yeah, email me at stuffbyscott@gmail.com. That's stuffbyscott@gmail.com. Yeah, and like, tell us if you think you're like, this, you're wrong, this movie was great, or you're wrong, this movie sucked. Or you're correct, and this is why I agree with you, or anything like that. And also tell us why Tony sucks. Just kidding, you're awesome, but you have nothing to do with this episode. But I wanted to say your name just so that you could be like, oh boy, they mentioned me again, and they post on Facebook, and And we're like, ah, I feel important. And that's a wrap.
This is a Scott Does Stuff podcast.